Scott's handing out a coloring sheet for the little kids. And sorry for everyone else, I didn't do any handouts. Because this particular Bible class can go in a multitude of directions. And I didn't want to type out all the possible directions that I could take this thing. It really depends on y'all's comments on where we go with this. I've got a lot of paper here. Okay, this is my research and development. No, just research. I didn't develop anything. But anyway, so I've got a lot of material, and we're not going to make it through all of it, and I know that, and it's okay, but it really depends on y'all's comments, questions, concerns on which direction we go. So, who can tell me last week what our key reason was that we're focusing on as to why Christ came to earth? Kids, y'all made a little crown. What did that crown represent? Who wears a crown? A king. Yes, sir. Okay, so what does that mean Jesus came down to do? He's the king. Came down to save the world. Yes, he did. We talked about that one, but that's not the one I'm looking for. Establish his kingdom. Very good. Okay, we're going to continue that thought of the kingdom of Christ. Okay? So let me get all of my papers in order here. We went over what characterizes a kingdom. We have a ruler or a king, right? What else do we have? Subjects. What else?
Territory.
You can't say the next one. One more.
Law.
Very good. Okay, so inside of a kingdom, we generally have a culture. Correct? Incorrect? We're correct, okay? Let's put this into perspective of the United States, since that's what we live in today. What would be a defining attribute of our culture?
Freedom.
Freedom. Freedom's a good one.
Chaos right now.
I'm sorry? Chaos right now. Yeah, right now. That's not our culture, though. We're not a culture of chaos. We just have some chaos happening. Yeah, we have a bunch of cultures, don't we? Okay. I heard one person tell me the reason why socialism wouldn't work in the United States is because there's too many people that place their values on different things, because we have too many cultures inside of the United States. Whether you agree with that statement or not, I actually think that's one reason why it probably wouldn't work, but that's another story, okay? Any other characteristic? I want y'all to think about culture, okay? Because we're going to get into the culture that was prevalent in Jesus' time. Patriotism. Very proud. I'm sorry?
Constitutional rights.
That's right. We focus on our rights. We're very proud of those rights. We hold them up as a value. Okay? Anything else? What about our language? I'm sorry?
Universal language?
What do you mean?
English.
Right? We have English here. We have a lot of other languages too, but I'm sorry? Yeah, freedom. Yep. Okay. At one time, we were called a Christian nation. Now, or maybe not now, but let's say two decades ago, they picked up the phrase Judeo-Christian nation, right? That was our culture, all right? Those are topics that if you were to take the collective whole, you would have a culture. Now, we have people, professors, doctors that study, psychologists studying cultures. Okay, you have this big culture, United States, but then we have subcultures inside of them. And one neat way to look at it is here is the big culture, and here is our little subcultures, okay? Oh, look, some of them intersect. Not all of them, but some of them, okay? We have a bunch of little cultures in there, okay? Very simple diagram. Feel like I'm either being followed too well or not followed well enough. Okay, good. All right. So these subcultures or sub layers of culture can represent things like in America, we have Irish Americans, Mexican Americans, German Americans down there in Fredericksburg, right? They're very proud of being German descent. Okay? You go down to Del Rio, the HEB used to be painted pink. That's a very Mexican cultured building. Adobe, okay? Sometimes our cultures are based out of necessity too. Adobe is a very cool building. It stays very cool. And so these buildings down around the border, around the equator, are made out of adobe to help keep the residents inside that building cool because there's no air conditioner. Okay? That's right. You got to use the mud. So sometimes our cultures are built out of necessity. All right? Nomadic people, their culture, they didn't have a lot of worldly possessions, nomadic people, because they had to pick them up and move. Right? So their values weren't placed on physical possessions. All right? So now let's start thinking in terms of the Bible. We're specifically studying the life of Christ and things related to the life of Christ. And we have this kingdom now that's being built amongst a culture that's already existing. It's already there. Okay? So, those who may be historical scholars or even just Bible scholars really should know some of these answers. What was prevalent? Who was in rule? How about let's do that? Who was in rule during in the Middle Eastern world, Israel, of the Israelites? Who was in charge? Rome, okay? Before Rome, who was in charge of the known world? The Greeks, okay? The Greeks, they brought around a universal language, right? That's why they were so important. They helped harmonize all the civilizations that they conquered, okay? In fact, most of our earliest transcripts of the Bible are in Greek. What did Rome do? That's right. Roadways, highways. Okay? I'm sorry? Oh, yes. Yes. They actually, the Roman rulers, and I've got a blurb on this too later. Augustus, maybe? No, well, I guess it was, well, I'll find it later. But anyways, one of those Caesars did a really good job of keeping the peace amongst the nations. Julius?
Yeah, he backed Rome off.
Yep.
The indoctrination of the Roman culture.
Very good. Yep. So, they even did a good job with peace. Here's my peace symbol. Okay? Kipton, how does one nation come into control of another nation? By war. That's how these places got into power, these kingdoms. By war. They conquered them and then put one of their rulers right in the middle of them. Who do we know that was in Jesus' time a ruler over that area?
Herod.
That's right. Okay? So, was he a Jew? Was he ruling over Jewish people? Yeah. He's making sure they're obeying the rules, paying their taxes. Okay? Well, who else is is in this same area that Jesus is going to be born in, besides Romans and Greeks. What was Jesus?
Hebrew.
Jew. Okay? As an American, with all these subcultures, do they influence each other? Yes. Okay? The Jews were very proud people to be separated from the Greeks, right? And the Romans, anyone that wasn't Jewish. But these still had influence over the Jews. Okay? So, we now have kind of a picture of what is this area, right? They've got three primary cultures that are all trying to live together. The Greeks, though, the Greeks have been conquered by the Romans and have given up their rights to Israel. They're still there, okay? In fact, we find that there are a lot of Jews spread all over the Roman Empire. They didn't just stay concentrated right there.
It might be helpful to point out that the Greeks were more of an aristocracy. They were the powerful landowners.
Mm-hmm.
And they assimilated more into the Roman culture. They assimilated because Rome gave promises to those individuals.
That's right.
The individuals of the aristocracy became the ruling class, the Senate.
Yep, yep.
The senators, and they possessed power.
That's right.
But it did become Rome by Caesar, Emperor.
Correct, correct. And what he's saying is there's a definite hierarchy there of who has power and who doesn't. Okay? So, an example of all three of these cultures being in one place is a site that we just discovered about 25 years ago called Sepphoris. I don't know how to say it. I'm not a scholar in that. But it's located less than 4 miles away from Nazareth. What do we know? Who famous person do we know is from Nazareth? Jesus. Okay? So, the city of Sepphoris, it was destroyed in a political feud in 4 BC. Okay? So here we see real politics happening, like what he was saying. Political groups are fighting each other, and they destroy this community, this building. Okay? And it was rebuilt during the time that Jesus would be growing up in Nazareth. Nazareth.
Suspect that Joseph, his father, a carpenter, which was more like a mason, would have helped rebuild Sepphoris.
Yes.
It becomes a very affluent city.
Oh, yeah.
Roman, back to Roma.
Yep. That's true. And there are assumptions that even Jesus may have worked on this as he's learning the trade of his father, okay? It's known as the Ornament of Galilee. It was wealthy, sophisticated, and mainly Jewish. But guess what they found when they uncovered this place? They found figures of Dionysus, the Greek god of the vineyard, okay? They found a theatrical movements came in about around the Greek ruled era, okay? And then they also found what they call the Mona Lisa of Galilee, which is a painting, a mural that resembles the Mona Lisa that we know from Italy, okay? But this was all built as one large Roman villa. Has the characteristics of a Roman villa. Okay? So we have artifacts, arts, and culture pointing to Greek, but we have a building that points to the Romans built by Jews. Okay? So, very important to remember that there's a lot of outside influences that we don't know, that we don't particularly get in the Bible until we get to the book of Acts regarding the Romans. But they're very, they're present. They're very present in the world when Jesus is born. Okay.
These Sanhedrin quarters, the ruling body over the Jews, was primarily ruled by the Sadducees. The Sadducees were very parallel with the Romans.
That's right.
They were political, whereas the Pharisees were not.
That's right.
They were anti-Rome, anti-political.
Yep.
But the Sadducees, two high priests at the same time, Caiaphas and they were both Sadducees.
Good segue. Sorry, were you finished?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like this, but that's just me.
So now let's talk about Judaism real quick, okay? We are aware from the Bible, from Jesus talking to certain people, they are told to us who they are, that we know of at least two sects, right, of Jews. What are they? Very good. Okay. Yes, sir. Actually, I've got four. You're getting ahead of me. I'll let you talk in just a moment when I get there. I need one of the kids that was in my class on Wednesday nights for Bible Bowl, which would be Kipton, Hoseas, Jaden, or Danielle, to tell me, how did we remember what the Sadducees were characterized by? Y'all remember? They didn't believe in the afterlife, so they were what?
Sad,
you see. Oh, and the Clark boys. Sorry.
Sad.
That's right. Sad, you sees. Why would you be happy if there was no afterlife? No heaven, no hell. You're just, this is it? You're done? You'd be sad, right? That's how I remember the Sadducees. Pharisees were known to be very legalistic, okay? To the point of fault, because they would bind things that were traditional rather than law. Okay? Now, James, what was the third sect that you know of?
Zealots.
Zealots. Yes. Who were the Zealots?
They were against Roman rule, so they were
rebels. They were rebels. Rebels against Rome. Okay? The Tea Party? I like to think of it as Star Wars. The light and the dark, right? You have the rebels. Okay? They were very legalistic, too, in the fact that the only laws worth obeying were the laws given by God. That no other nation should have any rule over them because God gave them everything they need. Okay? That's why they went against Rome. They didn't like being told what to do, who to pay taxes to. Okay, we also have another one that we discovered when we discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Essenes, I guess is how you would say it. Essenes. Okay. You know what? I don't want to put that there. I want to kind of put that off of the Sadducees a little bit. Because the Essenes and the Sadducees had a lot in common. They're very much ingrained in the governmental powers. They're aristocrats, okay? Higher ups, very wealthy. And they also did not, from what we can tell from the artifacts, they also did not believe in the afterlife. That this was as good as it got. And so you needed to obey God so you could have the most abundant life. Okay? I forgot how to spell it. Thank you. All right. We discovered these people back in 1947. They were living in Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered at the same time. The Dead Sea Scrolls are the oldest manuscripts that we have. Just further proof that God exists and what in His Word is exists. Okay.
Well, it's not the oldest; that's the most intact.
Okay.
Older and particularly.
Gotcha.
Fragments.
I guess the oldest complete series of books, I think, is what we found there. Thank you. Should have phrased it that way. All right. Talked about the zealots, the Pharisees, the Sadducees. Okay, so here, Christ is born in a country that has very heavy influence from the Greeks, the Romans, and the Jews. And the Jews can't even figure out which one of them is right. Okay? I see that in America right now. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
We have Christians that can't figure out who's right and who's wrong. Because they're just not reading their Bible.
Right.
That's what it boils down to. Okay? How did the Jewish people worship if they didn't live in Israel? Where did they go? I'm sorry? The synagogue. They go to the synagogues. There were priests there to help with their worship services. Okay? So now let's get even smaller into our subcultures. Okay? Here's our big culture, subcultures. Inside of those, we have even smaller ones. And a lot of times, these smaller ones are depicted by where they live, geography. Okay? Our culture within the Ninth and Main congregation is different than that maybe of Johnson Street, Southgate, North Chadburn. Even though we all wear the name Church of Christ on our sign, our cultures may be different, correct? Okay? So, let's get into what should our culture look like. Okay? That is the meat of the Bible study. And this is a little bit deeper than where we went last week. So kiddos, I'm sorry that this isn't as focused on kids as much as the ones in the past. But it's very important that we go over this. There's also a fifth category of Jews, if you really wanted to get down to it, called proselytes. Does anyone want to tell me who a proselyte is? A converted Jew, someone that converted to Judaism, not born into it. Okay. get all my papers here. Where's my paper? Oh, here. Let's look at Romans chapter 12, verse 2. I need someone to turn there. Romans chapter 12, verse 2. James the Third, are you turning there? Will you read that for me? Okay, from this passage, our culture, is it going to look like anything of the world? Is it to mimic the world's cultures? No. Okay? We're supposed to be different. All right? Galatians chapter 3, verse 28. Taylor, are you turning there? No? Okay. Who's got it?
There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither bond nor free. There is neither male nor female. For we are all one in Christ.
Okay. So only certain people can be part of our culture, right? No. Good. Yeah. No. Everyone is. We're not segregating ourselves anymore. This isn't Judaism and the rest of the world. Okay? We're Christians. There is no birthright into that. It doesn't matter where you come from, who you are. You can become a member of the church. Christ's kingdom. John 15, verse 19.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Are you saying there's just one culture?
Yes.
That's what you're saying?
That's what we're getting at. You're jumping the gun. Will you let me teach my class? John 15, verse 19. Good question. John 15, 19. Go ahead. Okay, so, folks, let's think about this one for a second. We're not going to look like the world. We're going to accept everyone from the world to be a member of the church if they go through the right steps, right? We talked about that last time. Okay, you have to seek the citizenship. You can't just be made a citizen, okay? Just because you say, I want to be one, then you walk off and go murder somebody. That doesn't work that way, okay? So, but what does it say about the world outside of our kingdom? They're going to hate us. Teenagers, you're not going to be popular. Okay? You're not going to be liked everywhere. Everyone will know you to be nice and sweet, or should, and a good person, moral. But they're not going to like that you don't do the things that they do and that you don't agree with the things that they do. They're not going to like that at all. College students, it's going to happen. I lost some good friendships over this before. But I've also helped people find the church through it too. Okay? Mark 7. Mark chapter 7. This one's too long for us to read everything. But I would like to point out that in this chapter, the gist of it, it's 1 through 37 if you really want to go back and read it. But based off of time, we're not going to do that. It's saying to defy your traditions. Jesus is telling these people, you're holding up traditions over law. Okay? So now let's think about this. We're in a culture, right, as a Ninth and Main Church of Christ. Is our culture mimicking the culture that Jesus defines in his kingdom? If it's not, we can't hold on to traditions of the way we normally like to do them. We need to adhere to what God says to do, what Jesus says to do. Okay? And that's specifically in Mark chapter 7, verse 8. We can read that one. For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups, many other such things you do. Okay? He was dealing with Pharisees that were upset about traditions being broken by Jesus' disciples. Traditions, not laws, traditions. Okay? So, we've established that we're going to have some influence from the outside, but that we need to adhere to the culture that Jesus Christ has established in his kingdom. What would that look like as far as language goes? This time I'm not talking about English, Spanish, German, French, whatever. But what do you think that what I mean by that? Kipton, should we say bad words?
Yes,
no. Should we say no, sir, and yes, sir? Very good. We practiced. Should we use profanities? Should we tell bad jokes? Did I cover all of them? Bad jokes, profanities, manners. Okay, our language reflects our culture, the way Jesus would want us to be. So let's turn over to Matthew chapter 5, verse 37. And I know I didn't cover all of them because we're going to talk about one right now. We talked about it a little bit this morning in Mike's lesson. Matthew chapter 5, verse 37.
But let your yes be yes and be no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil.
Okay. What does that mean? When we say we're going to do something, we better do it. Or at least try every facet of our, put all of our energy into trying to do it. And if we fail, that's different than if we just don't try, right? Is everyone going to win first place in the 800 meter dash? There's only one first place. But man, I will come unglued on the kid that quit halfway through. I've told my kids, I don't care if you lose, but if you quit, if you stop trying, when your team is depending on you, you will see one mad dad. Mad dad to Chad, or mad Chad to dad. Yes, sir.
My dad told us growing up, he doesn't mind us doing certain things, playing sports or whatsoever. If you start something, you better finish it.
Yep.
He wasn't taking no for an answer. If you broke your leg or something happened, you better be on the sideline rooting your team on.
That's right.
You don't quit your team.
You know what? Here in this congregation here, I'll raise my hand. Who is uplifted by seeing the people here tonight? Okay? I'm encouraged. Yeah, just hearing us. I'm encouraged. Are y'all all actively up here talking right now like me? No. But you're encouraging me. It's just like when you break your leg, break your arm. You better be on the sidelines encouraging your teammates. Okay. Matthew chapter 15, verse 11. And someone else grab James chapter 3, verse 10. All right, read it. Defiles. All right. It's not what you put in your mouth that defiles you, what comes out of it, right? Raphael, will you tell me what that means? That's right. What comes from your heart, from your mind, is what presents itself as what you hold valuable. And if it's... Yes. Yes. Okay. You know, there's a whole chapter in... Over controlling the tongue. James, thank you. Okay. Controlling what comes out of your mouth. What comes... Because the tongue tells all. Right? Solomon said that. Who has James chapter 3, verse 10?
Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be.
All right. Out of the same mouth, blessings and cursings proceed. So, guys, we have a really good time, easygoing time, watching our mouths here in this building amongst our brethren. But what about when we're out there in the world? Are we just as guilty, you know, of what our worldly friends are talking about? Okay? So these are things to think about. We need to watch our language, watch what we say, make sure we do what we say. Okay? Now let's talk about the family. The family is very cultural, isn't it? In fact, you could even draw an even smaller circle inside of those small circles about your family. Right? So, your family, who is the head in the family? Trick question. God. Okay? God. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 22, 35 through 40. I appreciate your answer, though. I was fishing for that throughout the lure. You know, I was fishing for that answer. It's God. Matthew chapter 22, 35 through 40. And someone else grab Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. Who's got chapter 22, verse 35?
And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him, saying,
keep going.
Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?
Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment.
Stop there. Does it matter what else you do inside of your family if you're not doing that right there? No. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how successful your kid is in school. Doesn't matter if they have perfect manners because you're teaching them how to do that. That does not matter if they don't know anything about God. Doesn't matter. Okay? And then we know the second is like the first. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments, all the law and prophets hang. Let's go to Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. Who has that one?
But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you.
Okay. Again, what is top priority here? God. Okay? If you're doing everything worldly right in your family, and you're creating a good citizen of the United States, does it matter without God? It doesn't matter. You have failed as a parent. You failed. Okay, so God is first. Then who? Taylor. Who's after God? Well, they're one and the same. Good job. Yes, joke's on me that time. Good job. Who's after that? Who did you say the first time? The husband, Kipton. Who's next? Who's the head of the household? Dad, mom, children. Okay, that's what he just said. Sorry, Taylor, I put you on the spot. Let's first look at marriage, matrimony. Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 through 6. Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 through 6. This is important to understand before we even get into husbands and wives and dads and moms. I'll read it. And he answered, he being Jesus, and said to them, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh? So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate. So, biblical marriage is between who? A man and a woman. Man and multiple women? Multiple men to one woman? No. How can you have, and the two came together and became one if there's really three? Right? The two came together and made one. They were male and female. We seem to be a little confused in this nation. That's another story, okay? So, now that we have that understanding, let's move over to Ephesians chapter 5. Okay? Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 22 through 29.
Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the Father. Therefore, as the church is subject to the Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church, and gave himself to her, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water, that he might present it to himself, the glorious church, not have a spot, or any such thing, but that it should be holy and proud. Some want men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loves himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, and nourisheth it, and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church.
All right. So we see right here, right, the relationship that husband and wife are supposed to have. Husbands are over the household with their wives right there supporting them. And guess what else? We're supposed to present to God, our wives, as a what? What did it say? What does the scripture say? glorious church. Just like, I'm sorry?
Without spot or wrinkle.
So we're, as husbands, we're not supposed to put our wives in situations that would give them spot or wrinkle, right? They're to be blameless when we present them. That's a responsibility, folks, that husbands have. It's not a you win and you lost kind of a situation. That's a lot of responsibility on husbands. And wives, you know what? Sometimes we make bonehead decisions. And you know that we're fallible. But if you throw us under the bus and don't show subjectiveness to us, that's a spot or a wrinkle that you brought on yourselves. Okay? So, children, we know that you're to obey your parents, right? We know this from Ephesians chapter 6 and Mark chapter 10. I'm not going to go into those because I'm almost out of time. I'm not going to touch all the categories of the culture of the kingdom of God, okay? People devote a year at Southwest School of Bible Study trying to figure all that stuff out. Because we're studying our Bibles all the time. The whole Bible is full of what our culture should look like, okay? What the kingdom should look like. But we have a we have values, okay? We have values of how we prioritize things, okay? And inside the church, we're to we are to prioritize our own salvation first, okay? We're to take care of ourselves so we can bring others to Christ, all right? Remember that. And we're to continue to progress in our walk with Christ. We're not to be stagnant. That's John 15, 4 through 8, Mark 10, 17 through 27, 1 Corinthians 15 through 58. And that has to do with our evangelism too, all right? And then we have a responsibility to the kingdom itself. To the king, we are told to work, Matthew chapter 25, verse 26, and 1 Corinthians 15, 58. And then to the citizens, we need to work for them too, and be giving, and forgiving of each other, and to do good for each other. All right? And I'm almost out of time. We have a code of morality, don't we, in the church? And you can sum it all up, all the teachings of Christ, you can sum up what our code of morality is. And that's provided in what we call the fruit of the Spirit. And then the anti-code of morality would be what? If you have the fruit of the Spirit, what else do you have? Works of the flesh. Both are found in Galatians chapter 5. Okay? Galatians chapter 5. Verses 16 through 26, for those taking notes. And then I mentioned something in theory last time, that our outward appearance would be a determining factor of what culture we belong to, right? If you focus on the works of the flesh, it said in verse 21, let's turn over there, Galatians chapter 5, verse 21. There's a phrase there, and the like, in verse 21. It names off all these terrible things. Then it says, and the like. Okay? If we are marking our bodies with satanic symbols, though we don't worship Satan, is that an attribute of the church and the kingdom our culture should be? No. I knew a man in Bangs, Texas, that had a tattoo of the devil on his arm. And when he decided to obey the gospel, he went through a very expensive surgery to remove that tattoo. To absolutely remove it. He wasn't going to let that be something that was seen by the outside world as a mark of the Church of Christ. He wasn't going to do it. Okay? Same with the things that we may wear on our shirts. Or wearing our shorts a little too short. Okay? Those are things that the world is promoting. We aren't to advertise our bodies that way in the church. We need to watch what we wear, what we mark ourselves with, how we do things, because we are a constant example to the outside world of what the church should be. What did Paul do when he took, or Saul, Paul, he was Paul at this time, when he took his oath? Y'all know what I'm talking about? Acts chapter 21. What did he do? Shaved his head. It was an outward sign of what he did. Okay? And if you're going to do what he did, that's what you had to do. You're going to shave your head. Now is to let people know. When we join the church, when we join the kingdom of God, and we are obtaining to this culture, our outward appearance is going to change too. It just is. You're going to start thinking about things differently. You're going to start looking at other leaders in that congregation and how they're doing things. Right? You're not going to wear cutoffs and a tank top to lead singing Sunday morning. Okay? You're not going to do it. Because you want to make sure that everyone knows here that you respect the authority of God, you respect the culture that is the church, and you're willing to kick your culture that you came with out to the side. You're willing to do it. Okay? That's all I've got for this class. We didn't make it through every passage that I wanted to. But I gave them to you so you could write them down in case you wanted to go back and read them. Any questions, thoughts, concerns, arguments, debates?
The Bible serves as still today a relevant and practical message for all nations of the world. When the Bible principles are put in practice, you will see a godly nation, a godly people.
That's right.
A nation that's perfect? No, because of people. But a nation that's godly? Yes.
Yep.
And that's what we're throwing away today. Throwing away the principles, and as you mentioned, like with marriage, we're redefining things according to what measure, according to what standard. Well, lust.
Mm-hmm.
And lust is ruling our people, it's ruling our minds today, and every decision that we make nowadays is based upon the lust of the flesh. And I speak generally, but that's what's defining us as a people, as a world. And we are in the throes, as Brother Hedick said, of chaos. Chaos is not from God. Chaos is from Satan. And so until we get back to these principles, teach them, apply them, and show that they work.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about godliness that I like so much, and I like it, is that it works. And it's healthy. You don't have to tell me how to eat. God tells me how to take care of myself. And so if we'll practice godliness,
yep. Very good. Yep. Any other comments? Yes, sir.
I'm thankful, especially as a shepherd, for the strength we have here. You're part of that.
Yes, sir.
We thank God for classes like tonight. Thank you.
You're welcome. If you'll all thank me one time, I won't be able to walk out the door. My head will get real big.
But it's like you said, it's all about what
you think. There we go. Thank you. You know, one thing back to my little cellular model there, that's what it looks like to me. It looks like a cell. Is the Ninth and Main culture going to look like the same culture that's in Africa or Egypt or Pakistan? That church is going to look a little bit different. A little bit different. For instance, they may not wear suits and ties to work, to worship. They may wear something else. They may not get to worship in a building like this because they're getting persecuted by the government. And they know that if they gather right there, they're dead. Okay? So they gather in people's homes. But you want to know one thing that is? This right here is exactly the same no matter where you go, the big circle. It's going to be exactly the same. Everywhere. The same values, the same family structure, the same language, the same everything that we went through, and everything that we didn't go through. It's going to be exactly the same. It's going to have respect to God, which is going to help you choose how you adorn yourself at worship services, right? You're going to have a respect for the word that tells you how to speak to people, right? Anyways, that's all I got. Thank you all. Yeah.